This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The first Olympic Games to take place in the United States, which included the marathon, happened right here in St. Louis in 1904 as part of the World's Fair. As you can imagine, being the first of anything, let alone an event like the Olympics, came with several challenges. It also served as a snapshot of the U.S. at the turn of the 20th century, flaws and all. A couple of years ago, I spoke with Missouri Historical Society public historian Adam Kloppy about St. Louis and those Olympic Games in 1904. I asked Adam to share some context about that first Olympics and how St. Louis strong-armed its way to hosting the third Olympiad.
St. Louis, you know, was hosting the 1904 Olympics, but you know, funnily enough, they weren't supposed to host those games at all, right? 1904, it was going to be the third modern Olympiad. It had been Athens and then Paris, and then the Olympic Committee knew that they wanted these games to be in the U.S. because the U.S. is sports crazy, and the first two games hadn't gone that well. So let's get these games to the U.S. so that sports crazy Americans can help boost these games. So a bunch of cities put in bids to get the Olympics, and Chicago actually ends up winning the bid for the 1904 Olympics. Mm-hmm. St. Louis loses. And the World's Fair is supposed to happen in 1903. So the World's Fair gets delayed for several reasons, construction delays, securing participation, stuff like that. And, you know, once the fair gets delayed until 1904, the fair committee essentially writes to the Olympic committee and says, hey, your first two Olympics didn't go so well. You want to make sure these are a big success. We're going to have our own international athletic competition in St. Louis, and we guarantee you it's going to be bigger than your little Olympic games. So you might want to rethink where you're going to have these. So the Olympics actually agrees and moves the games to St. Louis. Like, that's how sort of not a big deal the Olympics were at the time. That, you know, just that one little bit of pressure can make them say, okay, we need to rethink this whole thing. So they end up moving the games to St. Louis.
The marathon is one of the premier events of the modern Olympic Games, both for men and women. And in 1904, there was no women's marathon, but the men's marathon is infamous as a literal hot mess. So Adam, what was it that objectively made that Olympic marathon the worst in Olympics history?
Well, I mean, you know, in 1904, just like today, the marathon was, you know, the signature event of these Olympics, right? The president of the World's Fair was there to fire off the starting pistol. And the president's daughter, Alice Roosevelt, was there to give a laurel to the winner. Like, it was a big deal for the World's Fair and for these Olympics. But very quickly, it came across how poorly organized this event was. After the athletes completed several laps at Francis Field, which is, you know, the facility at Wash U there, the marathon course took them out onto roads in St. Louis County. Those roads were unpaved, and they were not closed to traffic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's August, it's St. Louis, it's really hot, there's cars, there's horses and buggies, there's people kicking up dust. So several of the runners end up being hospitalized because they had breathed in so much dust during the course of the event.
Right.
And they really didn't have good ways to get that dust out of their throats either. The people who organized the marathon, they also thought of themselves sort of as scientists. And they only set up two water stations for the entirety of the Olympic marathon course. So imagine that, running 20 plus miles in St. Louis August heat. You only get two drinks of water the whole time.
Mm.
Most of the athletes end up dropping out of the event, quitting in the middle. There's a few that cheat. They get rides in cars and stuff and try to get there. The guy who ends up winning the marathon, his trainers who are following him in a car, at one point he's hallucinating. He's near the end of the race, but he thinks he just started. He's like not doing well. So they give him a mixture of egg whites, strychnine, and brandy just to give him some calories and get his muscles firing again so that he'll finish the race.
And strychnine is commonly known as rat poison,
yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's their version of unfederally regulated and checked Red Bull.
Right. Yeah, kind of. It was just a way to, like, let's see if we can get his muscles sort of moving again. But he's the guy that ends up winning. So yeah, it was a big mess of an event.
Mm-hmm. And there were runners who also stopped to take naps, got food poisoning from fruit.
Yeah, there was a guy who went to sleep in an apple orchard after he had eaten some rotten apples off the ground and, like, ended up with, you know, really bad stomach pains and all that stuff. You know, there was one runner that showed up and he was wearing essentially street clothes and, you know, street shoes, and other runners had to, like, cut his pants into shorts and give him running shoes and stuff. It was a much different kind of event than it would be today.
And to the point that you'd made about scientists, the runners were also test subjects, and there were only two water stations that you've mentioned. I mean, what in the Sam Hill was the purpose of that? And what did it maybe reflect about other parts of the 1904 Olympic Games, which was part of the World's Fair?
Yeah, you know, I think part of the World's Fair was that they were trying to, you know, demonstrate the latest and greatest in, you know, European scientific theories about all sorts of things. And in the early 20th century, of course, there's a lot of theories about, you know, new theories about how bodies work. There's theories about race science and things like that, too. Mm-hmm. As a companion to the Olympic Games, they actually sponsored an event called the Anthropology Days. As part of the World's Fair, there were over 1,000 people that were brought to St. Louis from the Philippines who had their lives and bodies put on display, essentially for the amusement of fairgoers. And there were colonized and indigenous peoples here from all over the world who were on display. And the Anthropology Days was sort of a companion to the Olympics, where some of those colonized peoples were made to compete in Western-style Olympic sports and then had their results compared against Olympic athletes, white Olympic athletes. And then that evidence, you know, quote-unquote evidence, was used as, you know, support for theories about racial hierarchies and things that were in vogue in a lot of scientific circles at the time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's incredibly racist, you know, and led to a lot of very incorrect thinking about different peoples from around the world. And so, you know, that's an important part of that Olympic legacy, though, in St. Louis, is to try to wrestle with that while we're also talking about things like the marathon and, you know, the plunge for distance and some of these, you know, more, you know, jovial kinds of stories that we can look back and laugh a little bit, right? We have to wrestle with some of that harder history, too. Mm-hmm.
That was Adam Kloppy, public historian at the Missouri Historical Society. We spoke in August 2024 about St. Louis being the host of the third Olympiad in 1904 and how it became an interesting chapter in Olympic history. We need to take a quick break. Coming up, we'll talk about St. Louis winning its bid to host the 2028 U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Moving beyond St. Louis's status as America's first Olympic city and the historic 1904 Games that included a marathon on dusty roads, cheaters, and rat poison, let's talk about last week's announcement that St. Louis won the bid to host the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials on March 25, 2028, in the lead-up to the L.A. Olympics. Here's producer Alex Hoyer.
Mona Vespa is the president of Go St. Louis, and Mark Schreiber is the president of the St. Louis Sports Commission. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, Mark, I want to start with you. The St. Louis Sports Commission is no stranger to bidding for and hosting some big events. Just last year, there was the NCAA Men's Frozen Four, and then earlier this year, there was the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. How long ago did the ball get rolling for bidding on the marathon trials?
Yeah, this was spring of last year, of 25, and came about because we're always, being an Olympic city, it's really important to us to make sure we're doing something big in an Olympic year to connect to the movement. And, you know, we're looking at the highest profile Olympic trials, and that's everything from gymnastics, swimming, and I'd put Olympic marathon in there, diving to a few others in the mix. We were able to establish pretty early on we couldn't do gymnastics or swimming for the upcoming Olympic year in 28 because, long story, but basically Dome was booked with convention. So we came across our colleagues at USA Track and Field, mentioned event was up for bid. And, you know, in that moment, you're like, yeah, that's going to be a great fit. It makes so much sense for St. Louis. And that got the ball rolling. And here we are a year later.
And in terms of the Olympics, there are also going to be some soccer matches in St. Louis at Energizer Park already. So there's another Olympics connection that's happening there, too.
Yeah. And as I like to say, who knew the Olympics would be coming back to St. Louis so soon? And here we are,
right,
hosting Olympic soccer, which is outstanding. And all the credit goes to St. Louis SC for that, for making that happen. And what a 2028 we now have with the Olympic marathon trials, Olympic soccer, and likely the Olympic torch relay coming through here.
Mona, at what point were you and Go St. Louis brought into the bid process for the marathon trials?
So I think, you know, and Mark can speak to a little bit of this, but once the process gets real, once, you know, there's the part where you're like, okay, we have to write this bid, and there's all these pieces of it. And, you know, in that bid process, it was extensive, and there's a lot of race management in that. And that's the part where, you know, Mark approached and said, hey, like, this is the city's marathon. What can we do? You know, let's work together on putting this bid together and bringing in that side of it. It's a pretty technical bid process in general, in terms of like the things you have to outline about how the race will go, about the race management, about the course, all those pieces.
Who is in charge of the course?
Well, that is a collective effort all the way, starting with USA Track and Field, who ultimately gets to say quite a bit of how this works. And even in the bid, as we look to design the course or propose a course, there's a lot of very specific requirements that they dictate. Some are because of the runner experience, the athlete experience that they're looking for. Quite a bit is because of television. So it's a very specific process. The course is very specific. There's lots of technical detail to it. All, of course, starts with them. And then it, you know, trickles down to, like, obviously we work with the city of St. Louis. We have runners who are weighing in, who are on our management team, who have said this is going to make the best course. But there's a lot of people involved in it.
How long is this bid? I imagine it's dozens and dozens of pages.
Oh, yeah. It's about this thick. I was almost thinking of bringing it in today to show you, and I left it in the car. I apologize.
And you, because our listeners cannot see your...
That's true. That was really stupid. I apologize.
But you put your fingers in such a way that was several inches thick.
Wasn't it 100 pages?
It's a binder about that many, and it outlines everything from, you know, what our structure is going to be, who are we bringing to the table, able to help with the local organizing committee, to how we're going to market the event, what the course looks like. And a big piece too is the financial piece, is how are we going to raise the money to pull this off and do it in an outstanding way.
How much money does it cost to put on an event like this?
That's in the bid. You know, we're looking at a budget well north of $2 million to produce the trials.
There were only two cities that made a bid. It was St. Louis and Phoenix. Mark, why do you think St. Louis won?
Well, I think there's a whole list I could rattle off to tell you. But among the key reasons, one was the vision for what this could look like in the story of St. Louis being America's first Olympic city. And the vision of, we're going to start the race at Francis Olympic Field, site of the 1904 Games, and then we're going to end it at Energizer Park in a spectacular way. Something that's really never been done for Olympic trials before, to end in a 22,000-seat stadium. And imagine that scene with packed house and the crowd cheering as the athletes come through the tunnel. So I think that was a big piece. And the other part I go back to is just the collaboration and community support that we have. And I think that was an eye-opener for the selection committee. We did, when we had the site visit in February, we hosted a brunch where we brought together dozens of community leaders and partners throughout the region. And I like to call it our show of force brunch, because you do that and you say to our friends from USA Track and Field and the selection committee, look at this group, and how much do they care and want this event and how supportive they're going to be. And I think that actually separates St. Louis often from the competition, when we have a community of business leaders, political, civic, sports leaders that are all willing to step up to say this matters and we're behind it. We do that really well in St. Louis.
Mm. What about for you, Mona? Why do you think St. Louis was chosen?
Well, I think those are all great reasons. And certainly, I mean, those are the things on the top, right? That's definitely the thing that has to just hold it all together. As it comes to the running side of things, you know, obviously St. Louis had good weather that time of year. So the trials in the bid, it is required to be on a very specific weekend. That was not our choice. So that date of March 25th and 26th, that weekend, that was written in. And luckily, St. Louis is in a good weather position at that time of year.
Especially compared to Phoenix.
Correct. You know, yeah, if we're going to set them side by side, that would be the case. And I think also, you know, from the running perspective, two pieces. One, we have an incredible running community here. I'm probably biased. That would be true. But we really do. And I would say even just knowing the running industry nationally, I think we are punching well above our weight in terms of like the strength of the running clubs, the retail stores, all of the different pieces of it. My organization, Go St. Louis, and that's not me, that's like everyone behind us. It is a really strong running community. And then the other side of it is, I think from a racing perspective, despite the fact that St. Louis isn't flat, that's not necessarily a bad thing. When you're designing a trials course, when you're looking at the pieces of what you want to do to put together in a successful Olympic team going into the actual Olympic marathon, you really look for a course that can separate out some winners. And you don't always want super flat when you're doing that. Sometimes you want some undulation. Hills are what are set people apart. Hills are where, you know, you win a race. And some of that up and down is really not a bad thing for what they're looking for.
You had, by the way, asked the question about how this all came together. And Mona mentioned weather. An interesting thing in all this is the past trials, last few, have been February, I think even January.
And they've been very hot.
Yes, but well, it wouldn't have been hot here. And right. When we first talked to our colleagues at USA Track and Field, knew that the event was going to be up for bid, the date hadn't been established. And we're trying to figure out, can we make this happen in St. Louis? Are we able to bid on it? If it is a January or February event, and then the RFP, the request for proposal, came out, and sure enough, it's last weekend of March. It was sort of like it was meant to be. It's like, well, this is great. It could not be a more perfect weekend for St. Louis.
What I'm hearing you say, Mark, is that you are guaranteeing that it's going to be a high in the mid-40s, cloudy, and it's not going to rain. Is that right?
I am not saying anything for fear of jinxing us,
right?
Because I will surely do that. Yeah. But I am optimistic.
You were talking about hills and that how that's not such a bad thing, Mona. And St. Louis is what I describe as deceptively hilly. I know this because I run in the city. I've run the Greater St. Louis Marathon. But I'm also thinking about how you design a course that's most favorable to the athletes, because not only do they have to run first, second, or third, well, there's a number of ways to qualify for the Olympics, but there's going to be some kind of world qualifying time that the
That's
athletes
right.
have to set. And I looked it up for what the 2027 World Championships is, and it's 2 hours, 6 minutes for men, 2 hours, 23 minutes, 20 seconds for women. And I don't know if the Olympic time has been set yet, but how do you think of that when you're trying to, in a way, benefit the U.S. athletes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is highly technical, way more than I think someone might understand going into it. And good job doing your homework on that one. So the way it works, first is, yes, obviously, you know, we're looking to send the top three in on the men's side and the women's side. And so you want those people, as they come in, as they're crossing the line, one, two, three, to be first, second, and third, and going to the Olympics. The reality of it is there is a world athletic time standard. And those times you mentioned, I think they haven't set it yet for this upcoming cycle, but it's pretty close. Here's the thing. What we hope, and what is likely the case given the running industry right now, given the talent that we're seeing in nationally, men's and women's side, most of those athletes who are in, probably even within those like top 5 to 10 on each side, should have already hit that standard by the time they get to St. Louis. And that's likely the case. Now, could they actually do it on our course? For sure. I don't think that this course will be particular. I think it's going to be a great course for producing fast times and fast Olympians. However, that said, it is likely that most of those athletes will have already hit that standard at another race in the last 2 years leading up to it.
I'm talking with Mona Vespa, the president of Go St. Louis, and with Mark Schreiber, president of the St. Louis Sports Commission. The news of St. Louis hosting the marathon trials was announced last week at a press conference at Wash U's Francis Olympic Field. St. Louis Olympians Jackie Joyner-Kersee and Dawn Harper-Nelson were there. The two of you were there, and another person that was there was Ricky Hughes. He's the founder of the local running club St. Louis Run Crew, and our producer Maya Norfleet caught up with him.
Folks are already planning, like cheering and running. So they're doing the trials on Saturday, and the Greater St. Louis Marathon is moving to Sunday, so they'll be back to back. So the whole weekend will be just a vibe. And we do a lot of activations that weekend. So people talking about parties, and we actually do a project with Go St. Louis called Run the City, where I leverage my relationships with other diverse run crews from across the country that come to St. Louis. Last year we had like 7 different run crews from Chicago, Detroit, Texas, Boston, New York, LA. People love St. Louis, and it is cool to represent and show folks in St. Louis that other people from outside the city also love St. Louis. So internally, we're already planning what that weekend is going to look like for us and how we show up and the energy that we bring to the city and the run space.
Mona, what's your reaction to hearing Ricky there?
Oh, man. I mean, I couldn't be more thrilled to both have Ricky as a supporter of everything running in St. Louis, and then to have him really be a nationally recognized leader of run crews around the country, him bringing people into St. Louis, the way he's done it, the way he makes them feel welcome and celebrates everything that is great about running in St. Louis to that national audience is super awesome. We couldn't be more thrilled to have him on our side.
You mentioned it earlier, and Ricky mentioned it there in what we just heard, that the Greater St. Louis Marathon is going to be tied into this weekend. It is going to move earlier so that the marathon that anybody who cannot run a marathon a little north of 2 hours can run in. But what's that process like of combining this into 2 days of racing?
Yeah, great question. Probably a lot of detail still to be worked out there. You know, again, I think we had some awesome things playing in our favor. The fact that we only really had to shift back a week to make this happen kind of makes it meant to be. It's a great time of year for us in general. The Greater St. Louis Marathon is usually the first weekend in April. And then in terms of like how we will build that experience, the first thing we know is there are hundreds of thousands of people who are going to be in St. Louis, most of whom are like a bunch of people who love running. Like, why would we not capitalize on that opportunity to both have them be a part of our event and also showcase our city in the way that like has them running on the streets as well? All of the detail behind it, will they run on a similar course? Will they get to run parts of it?
That's what I want to know.
Right? We really hope so. The shorter answer is definitely not all of it. The marathon trials are required to run on a criterion, which is a loop course. You can't put 10 to 15,000 people on a loop course. But will we get to run parts of it? Will they get an experience that makes them feel like they're a part of this historic? Absolutely. They will be a part of the trials in a really integral way and get to have that some of those great feelings and hopefully some activations around some of our Olympian or some of our athletes who are in town. So lots of good things coming there.
What can you tell us about the course in terms of maybe notable places that that the trials course might pass by?
Sure. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Obviously, all up to a lot of conversation still with USA Track and Field. But what we know now is, as we've all said, starts at Francis Olympic Field, great place in history. They will actually start on the track. Then they will pretty quickly head east. So they'll be running through Forest Park, which of course we love. They're going to stay on the flat side of that. and then they exit the park and head down likely Lindell to Olive into the downtown area. Once they're downtown, then that criterion loop will start. So it's looking to be a loop that's about 3 times in total before they end in Energizer Park. You know, some highlights, of course, they'll go past the Arch and the old courthouse, hoping to take them south towards Anheuser-Busch. What we know about St. Louis, if you run in St. Louis, you know that east-west is never flat, but north-south is a little flatter. So if they go the direction direction of the brewery and do that out and back there. That's a little bit easier kind of in terms of less undulation. So that's some of our general highlights.
Yeah. Mark, in terms of having the Greater St. Louis Marathon move to this weekend, how much does activating a community play into what a successful bid looks like and the way that a community supports? And you spoke to this a little bit earlier, but if you could talk more about that.
Huge, huge factor. And I go back to the U.S. Figure Skating Championships as like sort of the model for us recently of the way the community embraced that event was phenomenal. And if we can have the same thing happen for the Olympic trials and that weekend, we're going to be in such a great place. But that's a big thing is we need two things. You need the fan support of residents lining the course. There'll be, as Mona said, plenty coming in from out of town. But, we want this to be an accessible event for locals, and it's great. You don't have to buy a ticket to just stand on the street and cheer the runners on. And then, we have a big fundraising effort ahead of us. We need both the public, the private, and the public sector to help make this successful.
Something else Ricky Hughes, founder of St. Louis Run Crew, told producer Maya Norfleet is that Ricky recognizes that it's an exciting time, but he said that excitement is also fragile.
I think our position is, we're excited about the trials, that it can bring a very connective, universal energy to the city, but it's still fragile. And we got to be mindful that not everyone is as excited as some folks. We just are going to continue to, be on our mission to empower, make an inclusive space for folks to move their body and get in where we fit in, but also empower that we do take up space and we are excited to continue to preach the gospel of movement.
Mona, to Ricky's point, how do you both capitalize on this event, but also make sure that running is inclusive? Because at times, the sport of running has gotten a bad rap for not being inclusive.
Well, I think that's a really good point, and it's something that, we all continue to work on. Ricky's at the forefront of it, which is, and he's doing a fantastic job. I think that a really nice thing in on the side of the Greater St. Louis Marathon is really the message is this is the same finish line. These athletes are performing at a really high level. It doesn't mean that you're not doing the same hard work. It is the same finish line no matter what you do. And I think that having that opportunity on Sunday for everybody to be involved is really important to that. And, the other thing that I will say is I think that as a sport, we continue to have to redefine what inclusivity looks like, both from a diversity standpoint, from a speed standpoint. There are a lot of pieces of it that I know we do. The other thing I will say is I think a really nice thing that we can do organizationally as we move into this is tell a lot of stories. Interestingly, the Olympic trials are an event, and I don't know that this is the same case with a lot of sports. Obviously, I speak to one in particular, but most of the people coming to the trials, so say we bring in 500 athletes, 250 on the men's side, 250 on the women's side. About 10 of those people on each side train professionally. The rest of them are moms and dads. They have two jobs to try and make this work. They're getting up at 4 in the morning. They're not that different. They run quickly. We can't deny that. But they're just people that are doing what they love and making a lot of sacrifice to do it. And I think that in telling the stories of all of them, that provides a lot of connectivity that Ricky's talking about and a lot of bringing it back down to okay, these are just normal people. And I hope to be able to really do that.
Mark, there are often big economic impact numbers attached to sporting events. What are some tangible benefits that St. Louisans can expect from hosting the marathon trials, and how will you measure them?
Yeah, so naturally, if you're having tens of thousands of people coming in, you've got a lot of people spending money on hotels and restaurants and you name it. So there's certainly economic impact. USA Track and Field's figure that they put out there was $13.5 million. Whether it's $10 million, $20 million, I don't know. At the end of the day, it's meaningful for the region. And so there's certainly visitor spending that's so valuable and so needed. But it goes well beyond that. It's the three-hour showcase that we're going to have on NBC. And, Mona mentioned the course. I can't wait for that scene of the runners are going west on Market Street and they got the motorcycle guy in front of the group and that shot going, looking back down Market Street at the arch. What better image to put out to the nation and the world than that? And so that's a huge piece to it. And it's just the pride factor. When we are able to have these wins and have these big moments and be able to celebrate something positive for the community, that's such a boost for us. So yeah, the tangible piece are the dollars and cents, but I think it goes so much beyond that in terms of the meaning that an event like the Olympic Trials has for St. Louis.
Mark Schreiber and Mona Vespa, thanks so much for coming in today.
This was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mark Schreiber is president of the St. Louis Sports Commission, and Mona Vespa is president of Go St. Louis. They spoke with producer Alex Hoyer.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Production assistance from Maya Norfleet. Audio editing by Alex Hoyer.
And
by Maya Norfleet.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.